Good morning. This is the time set for argument in case number 88307, Fleshman v. Aguilar et al., including, of course, repair the boat. So the argument is scheduled for 17 minutes per side, which includes the initial 2 minutes for each side being uninterrupted time, followed by 15 minutes when we'll interrupt a lot. So, with that, counsel, would you like to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor, I'd like to reserve 5 minutes.
Okay. So you know the routine. You've heard it multiple times. So you'll get the yellow light and the tone when your time gets down to 5 minutes, but the clock keeps running. And for the respondent, repair the vote, then when your time gets down to 5 minutes, similarly, you'll get the yellow light and the tone, and that you continue using your time because you don't have rebuttal. And the Secretary of State will not be arguing today and did not take a position in the briefing with that.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. I'm David Fox for Appellant Jennifer Fleshman. Repair the Vote's petition would impose a strict new voter identification requirement. As a matter of federal constitutional law, the only way that can be done is if the state also makes adequate identification available to all voters who need it without charge. Nevada does not currently do that. The adoption of the petition would therefore require an appropriation or expenditure to expand access to free, acceptable voter identification for all voters who need it. Yet the petition raises no new revenue to fund that necessary expenditure, and its terse 47-word description of effect does not mention that expenditure or any of the other details of how the petition would actually function. The petition therefore violates Article 19, Section 6 and Nevada Revised Statutes 295.009. I'll start with the unfunded mandate issue, then address the description of effect, and then address the various preclusion arguments. First, on the unfunded mandate, one issue I think is undisputed, which is that if Nevada has to provide free ID to all voters who need it, that is going to cost the state money and require an expenditure or an appropriation. Repair the Vote has never denied that providing free ID to all voters who need it will cost money. They don't deny it in their brief here either. We submitted a series of fiscal analyses for prior petitions that would have expressly created a free ID program, and each of those concluded that it would require a government expenditure. So that issue, the factual question of whether this would actually, if indeed free ID is required, whether that would require a government expenditure factually, I think is not at issue in this case. Everyone agrees that it would. Instead, there are two questions here. One is, would the federal constitution really require free ID if this petition is adopted? And two is that issue an appropriate pre-election challenge, or is it somehow a substantive challenge? And I'll address each of those together, or each of those in order. First, the federal constitutional question. Yes, free ID would be required. Requiring fee-bearing identification is an obvious poll tax because voters have to pay the government fee for the identification if they wish to vote. It's no different from the poll tax in Harper, where voters had to have paid the $1.50 each over the course of the past 3 years if they wished to vote. Calling it a fee for...
So, counsel, we went past the 2 minutes. Isn't the fact that the proposed measure as to mail-in ballots doesn't necessarily require an ID that you have to pay for? Like, for example, you can use your Social Security number, which it doesn't require money to obtain. Doesn't that cut against your argument?
So, Your Honor, no, for two reasons. First is that in-person voting is a very important method of voting. It is the more traditional method of voting. It is a way of voting in which many, many people use. And it is still a poll tax, as the Supreme Court said in Harmon. It is still a poll tax if you can pay a fee to avoid a burdensome set of options, or you can go through the burdensome set of options. And for some voters, voting by mail is less convenient. For other voters, of course, they feel the other way. But to eliminate one of the two major ways of casting a ballot unless you pay a government fee is still a poll tax under the Supreme Court's analysis in cases like Harmon. So it just is not sufficient that you could vote absentee without paying the poll tax. I mean, admittedly, I think it helps, but it is still a government fee to cast a ballot in one of the primary ways that ballots are cast.
Right, because you know, of course, that under Nevada law currently, anyone can vote by mail. You don't have to make any special showing of the sort of traditional absentee ballot.
That's right, but a substantial percentage of Nevada voters still prefer to vote in person, and there are a variety of reasons why voters may prefer to vote in person, whether that's concerned about the security of mail voting, whether that's a preference to wait until the last possible opportunity to vote by mail. There are a number of reasons why voters prefer to vote in mail, and it's an important option that a very substantial, I think it's now a minority, but it's something like 40% of Nevada voters choose to vote in person on Election Day, and to eliminate that option without paying a government fee is still a poll tax. You know, in Crawford, it was true that under the Indiana law, you didn't need an ID to vote absentee. But the court still said, the plurality still said, that if there was a government fee for the identification, that it would be invalid under the analysis in Harper. And I grant you that it didn't expressly address this issue, but I think that's because Harmon makes clear that you can't just cut off a very substantial avenue for voting unless someone pays a government fee.
How does this issue, though, not really define itself as being a substantive constitutional challenge, which we do not allow to be made pre-election on an initiative such as this?
So the reason for that, Your Honor, is that if the petition is adopted, our position is not that it can't constitutionally be enforced. Our position is that it can constitutionally be enforced. It's just that the way to do that will require the state to make a government expenditure. So if it's adopted, Nevada will have, as part of its highest law, a requirement that these sorts of identification be shown before anyone can vote. And the federal constitution will say that's fine as long as you make identification free. And so presumably the legislature, which swears an oath to abide by both constitutions, will appropriate the necessary money. It will be duty bound to appropriate the necessary money to create free ID. And if it doesn't, then presumably someone's going to sue over it because it will be a poll tax, and then Nevada will appropriate the necessary money to pay a fee. Either way, there will be no opportunity at that point to raise the fact that here we have this new mandatory expenditure that should not have been able to be adopted via an initiative petition without revenue being raised.
But the proposed measure itself doesn't require provision of free IDs, and what your argument would require us to, as a predicate, evaluate the constitutionality with or without that in order to evaluate whether, in fact, it could require it. Isn't that excessively speculative?
So, Your Honor, I don't think so. And this court has, on prior occasions, engaged in significant substantive legal analyses in pre-election challenges to address the arguments being made in those challenges. I think the clearest example of that is the Las Vegas taxpayers case. And there it went to the description of effect. But there was a dispute about whether if you repealed the redevelopment authority, would that effectively void the existing redevelopment projects in the city of Las Vegas? And one side in that case said, no, it's prospective only. Another side said, yes, it will have this huge effect that's not mentioned. And that was a legal dispute. The court had to resolve that legal dispute. It had to construe the statutes in order to resolve that legal dispute. And it held, yes, in fact, it will repeal it retroactively. And so, therefore, that invalidated that petition because it wasn't mentioned in the description of effect. And so this is a federal constitutional question rather than a state statutory question. But it is still just a necessary piece of analysis to understand, will this require a government expenditure or not? And so I would also take issue, Your Honor, with the first sentence of your question. Our position is, yes, this does require a government expenditure. It's not that it doesn't. It doesn't expressly say that it requires a government expenditure. But the court's been clear since at least Herbst Gaming that explicit or implicit requirements for government expenditures violate Article 19, Section 6. And so this is an implicit one. Then the other point I would make is that if the court holds otherwise, then it would open up a very substantial loophole in the Article 19, Section 6 prohibition without any policy justification for that. I think the example we gave in our reply brief was a petition that says it would amend the Constitution to require Nevada to take possession of something like the Venetian Sphere for public use. And it would say nothing about paying just compensation. But obviously, under the federal constitution, if the state were to do that, it would have to pay an enormous amount of just compensation. And that would clearly violate the Article 19, Section 6 policy. It would open up a huge hole in the Nevada state budget, and it would present voters with this option that sounds great. Sure, why not take possession of it for public use if the expense isn't mentioned? But that is exactly what Article 19, Section 6 is supposed to prevent. And this is exactly like that. It just follows as a matter of federal constitutional law that if this step is taken, Nevada will have to make funding available for expanded free ID.
How does preclusion affect what you just said?
So there are three preclusion doctrines that have been invoked here. One is NRS 295.061. That only affects the description of effect. So for now, I'm just going to skip that one. Issue and claim preclusion are just not applicable here because Jennifer Fleischman was not a party in the prior case. So they're trying to assert preclusion against someone who was not a party in the prior case. Now, that is possible if there is privity. But there is no privity in this case. They have pointed to...
But when we expand standing to permit citizens to bring these kinds of challenges, does that not also alter the assumptions of classic issue and claim preclusion in this context?
So the only argument for a relationship that Repair the Vote has made here, and they have the burden of showing preclusion, the only argument for a relationship that they have made here is that both Ms. Fleischman and the prior challenger in 2022 were voters. But obviously voters have vastly different opinions and interests in the question of the validity of this petition.
But the unfunded mandate was vetted in 2022, right?
The unfunded mandate issue was addressed in 2022. It was rejected on different grounds that actually no one defends now, but it was, in fact, addressed in 2022. That's true. But voters' interests in this are just they're extremely disparate. It would be very unusual to find privity where you have a large number of voters who presumably favor this position and a large number petition and a large number of voters who don't. And if the court says that the first voter to bring a challenge thereby precludes every other voter who may bring an independent challenge, I think that raises immense concerns about collusive litigation, about gamesmanship, and it would just undermine the policy of the preclusion doctrines, which is that you're precluding people who either litigated or someone litigated on their behalf. And it's just not true that every time a voter files a challenge, they are litigating on behalf of every other voter. Voters have very disparate interests. I understand the Washington state courts have adopted a different version of this doctrine. It's not the case that this court has ever adopted anything like that. I'm not aware of any other court adopting anything like that. The Law v. Whitmer citation, in which there was a citation to the Washington state cases, that was from a district court opinion. It wasn't clearly addressed by this court's opinion. It was just an appendix. And even in that case, the district court didn't rely on the Washington state doctrine. It was just a CF site. There was a clear relationship in that case between the prior electors.
It's just a bit of a concern because so much litigation and then things never get resolved because if you do it every time, every 2 years, it's an extraordinary expenditure of resources.
So I think that there are various things that help with that. So one thing that helps with that is, of course, the strict deadlines in NRS 295.061, which requires basically within any given cycle, you know, any voter who wants to challenge has to file within 15 days, I believe it is, of the filing with the Secretary of State. So if there are multiple challenges, like, they can be consolidated. They're all going to come out at the same time. And in general, those get resolved within that cycle. I mean, they should get resolved within that cycle. And so this court has said, however, in Personhood Nevada, that if they don't get resolved within that cycle, it's moot, which suggests that there's not this effort to finally resolve it within a single cycle. I think if the goal was just to fully and finally resolve this, Personhood Nevada should have come out the other way.
This measure didn't get on the ballot in 2022, is that right?
That's correct.
So after the district court decision, it never got to that point.
That's correct. It looks to me like what happened is it was never refiled with the amended description of effect, which was just the proponent's choice not to do that. They could have done it. And it was never appealed, in part because if it was never refiled with the amended description of effect, the issue certainly seemed moot, and it would have been a little bit odd to file an appeal regarding a petition that clearly wasn't going anywhere. And again, I think that goes to this court's approach in Personhood Nevada, which is let's treat these as dead when they're dead, and we can address it again in the future if it comes up again.
So for this cycle, someone who wanted to make this same proposal needed to present it as here's a new proposal for the 2024 cycle.
That's correct, and that's exactly what they did. They filed a new petition with the Secretary of State. It got a new number. We filed then a challenge under NRS 295.061 in accordance with those deadlines. You know, with respect to the 061 sub 3 preclusion, first of all, that only affects the description of effect, but second of all, that talks about an amended description of effect. This is a new petition. It's never been amended. It's never been challenged. Yes, it's substantively identical, I mean, frankly, with the prior petition, but it's a new petition.
Do you want to reserve your time?
Yes, I'll reserve my remaining time. Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning, Justices. May it please the court, my name is David O'Mara. I represent the respondents, Repair the Vote, who have brought this initiative petition. I certainly don't mind if you interrupt me before my 2 minutes is up. It seems like there is a lot of questions for the court. But the initiative petition that we've filed here puts forth an amendment to the Nevada Constitution, and it requires photo identification or other verification of the voter's identity when voting in person or completing their mail-in ballot. Yes, as the Chief Justice stated, we in Nevada don't have voter in person as our number one voting preference anymore, because the Nevada legislature has changed our voting obligations to where every single voter who is an active registered voter receives a ballot, regardless of what they pay, what they do, and as long as they're registered, they get a ballot. And with that, that creates additional obligations of our legislature and our elected officials of providing an election that is free from fraud and things of that nature, because now we have every voter who receives a ballot and is either able to drop off that ballot at the voting location, mail it in, or turn that ballot in and then vote in person. So there's a lot of other things involved in this case to which we want to go forward. Now, there are two issues. One is the unfunded mandate, and the other is the description of effect. And the court really didn't get a lot into the description of effect with the appellants, but it's pretty clear. The description of effect in this case is straightforward, succinct, and it's really a summary of what's going to happen. And the arguments are is that we did not provide enough information. Well, if we would have provided more information, the argument would have been you provided too much information and you left out something, and therefore you confused someone. So as my seventh grade teacher used to say, you got to be short and sweet. And that's exactly what the law is. Straightforward, succinct, and a summary. It's not including every single aspect, which in the educational initiative case, this court said you don't have to set forth all the effects. It just needs to be straightforward, succinct, and a non-argumentative summary of what the initiative is designed to achieve and how it intends to reach its goal.
So what is it designed to achieve then? Where does it say that in the description of effect?
Right. So it's designed to achieve that voter identification is required in order for a person to in-person vote, and or if they mail in ballot, there are three provisions of what information they need to provide. And
that's how it intends to achieve something.
But right. And it achieves it by amending the Constitution to require that those requirements. So you have, and if you look at the case law, we've said, how are you going to do it? Are we going to amend a statute? No, we're amending the Constitution. That's how we're going to get to our goal of providing a photo identification and or information in regards to.
Are the proponents not required to say why they're making this proposal?
I don't believe they have to say why. That is not a specific requirement. The requirement is that what are we trying to do here? We are trying to ask for a constitutional amendment for photo identification. If you have to put why, that's going to enhance the straightforward, succinct, and a non-argumentative summary, because your why is going to be we're arguing of what we need to do, and that's not what this is for. It's a summary of saying, you know, we have this initiative petition. It's going to go on the ballot. If you want to vote, put it on the ballot, it's going to provide for a mechanism of amending the state constitution to allow for photo identification and other information to verify the identity of the voter. And so that's why. I mean, if you want to ask a question, Your Honor, we are asking to have verification of the voter's credentials and make sure.
Yes, Mr. Romero, I think, and to understand, I think what my colleague's asking, that is the what. You're going to have an ID, but it's a description of effect. So what's the effect?
The effect
is in the
yes,
description.
The verification. The effect is
what's the effect?
Well, there's a number of things about the effect. The effect is that the Nevada Constitution is going to be changed to require a new mechanism of verifying a voter to make sure that the voter is who they say they are. And that is the reason why, and that is what we're trying to do. Because you're asking what the photo ID will require. It's a verification of who the voter is going to be.
So the effect is, if you don't have an ID, you cannot vote in person. Like, that's an effect. That'd be one effect.
That's correct. Well, the effect is that the law, yes, the law will change the Nevada Constitution that you have to have a photo ID when you vote in person.
If I may, the description of effect that was provided here is the exact description of effect that the judge crafted in Mendenhall, yes?
That's correct.
And your original description of effect in Mendenhall was a little more lengthy.
I believe it was, yes.
It was like right around the 200 words that are allowed.
I don't believe it was much closer to 200. It may have been closer to the 47 than it was to the 200, but I don't know that specifically in front of you today,
okay.
Justice Hart.
But my sense is that description of effect was challenged in Mendenhall, and that's why the judge got involved in crafting a description of effect that ultimately became what you used here.
Right, and that's one of the reasons why you have preclusion of in regards to the statutory of the description of effect, and then you also have the res judicata and the collateral estoppel in regards to having those issues already litigated before the courts. But yes, I think that we're put in a position where this petition has already been challenged, and the length of it has been actually shortened to where the court has said, this is what I believe satisfies the statute and gives a proper summary for the voters to have an understanding of what the initiative petition is attempting to do.
Can you speak a little bit in terms of the funding mandate?
Sure. So the unfunded mandate question is obviously a very interesting argument by appellants because it's not
unique. It's been made in other states as well, correct?
You cannot have an unfunded mandate. That's correct. If there is an unfunded mandate, then it violates the Constitution. But this is not an unfunded mandate because we're not asking the legislature to do anything. They're not forced to do anything. And when the court was asking for whether or not the legislature is going to have to do anything after, they're not. They're not going to have to do anything afterwards, and they've already have the documents that are required in place. So we're not generating anything in regards to the Las Vegas case where you had to look at statutory law and things of that nature. You're not looking into the same type of case. Here, we've set forth specific methods of what's going to happen. Now, we believe that it's going to be enforceable when it is actually substantively challenged. Because when you actually do a substantive challenge, you've got to look at all of the factors of what's going on. And what appellants are trying to do and what they argue we're actually trying to do is they're circumventing the process, right, by trying to have you do it now when you don't have any of the evidence that you would need in order to determine whether or not this type of legislation is going to be sufficient.
Well, let me ask you this. If I don't have a driver's license or any of the forms of IDs enumerated in the proposed rule change or the constitutional change, and then I have to go to the DMV, and then who's going to pay for my ID?
You would under the statute, you would have to pay for the ID.
And how is that not a poll tax? I have to pay to vote now.
Because it's not for the provision of you being required to vote, that you have to pay this money. When you look at the Gonzalez case and you look at their analysis of Harper and Hardin.
But in Gonzalez, right, the law in Arizona allowed people to bring non-photo identification so they could bring a power bill and a water bill or something with their name and address, or they could provide any photo identification, so their Costco card, or they didn't have to have a government ID, which this bill requires a government ID.
But Gonzalez did specifically look at whether or not a photo ID for payment, and they talked about whether or not you may have to pay for an ID or something of that nature. Would it be an actual poll tax? And when it concluded it would not, there is certain mechanisms that we have to go forward, and that's what we're trying to avoid today, because in order for you to determine whether or not it's a poll tax or whether it is sufficient burdens upon people in regards to whether or not they're giving up their constitutional rights or paying the poll tax, you have to look at other factors. And that's evidence. Look at the Crawford case. I mean, they had depositions that they took. They had individuals that came in and talked about their burdens, and they talked about things of that nature in regards to
The reason that they found the Indiana law okay in Crawford is because Indiana offers free identification, which Nevada does not.
But right? They did not. There is no specific ruling that says that having to pay for anything is a specific poll tax, is what Gonzalez kind of went into and said, look, this is not a poll tax because we're not requiring this to be something for the availability of you to vote. It's for the qualifications of the voters.
Well, what is a poll tax except money you have to pay to be able to vote?
But you don't have to. In Nevada, you don't have to pay anything to vote. You get a ballot if you're registered. It gets mailed to you and things of that nature. It's not that you have...
You just have to pay to vote in person.
That is one of the factors of the statute. But what the court cannot do today is there's got to be evidentiary support in regards to feathering out whether or not there's a substantial burden, whether or not there's the state interest in regards to what they're trying to do. And I would suggest to you that when you get to, if you were to have gotten to the substantive, you would have a huge burden of why photo ID is now necessary in regards to the mail-in ballots, because you have someone getting a mail-in ballot. They get
but
it
if
in
you
their
live in the rural areas and it's not easy for you to get to a DMV in-person location, where which you have to do to get your photo ID.
But you don't need a photo ID. You get your ballot delivered to your house. It's already prepaid. You get to fill it out and mail it. If you want to take it into the court, you can still fill it out and drop it off. The state interest in that is that when someone comes in with their ballot and says, I don't no longer have it, and it's been mailed or they could have dropped it off, then you have to ask them, we want to make sure you're that person, and here are the identification requirements that you need to have.
Can you speak a little bit about the evidence presented by the appellant with respect to the Harvard study and all of these other, you know, kind of statistical things or analysis that were put into play to show the economic impact that
No, I cannot, because they've been not challenged down in the district court level in that regard. They've not been fettered out with any other experts that would be provided by the other side. I think that's just when you look at it and you find out what's going on in this regard, you can't really look at those type of analysis because it wasn't pursued during the district court's findings or anything of that nature. There was no analysis in the district court as to that, because there was no requirement to figure out whether or not this was a substantive challenge in the district court. And so since there was no substantive challenge in the district court, all of that information doesn't come out. And that's why this initiative petition is set up this way. It's set up to where if you provide the information and it does come into play that the initiative is passed twice, then someone can make a substantive challenge. Now, the argument about the Venetian, we can just pass an initiative saying the government can take this sphere, that is just quite frankly not going to happen. And when the Venetian would be filing a lawsuit saying you cannot take this, you have to follow you take a substantive challenge. That's what happens.
Well, it's so the here same. We have a voter filing and saying you can't require me to pay to vote.
Well, that could be the exact nature. And the thing about it is in regards to
the point is we respect the ability of people to vote and tell us whether they want a law before we challenge the constitutionality of it.
That's right. The initiative petition is set up for the voters to make a determination of what they want. And the challenge has happened afterwards because it may not pass. It may not be, it's speculative. And so when you look at that situation, we believe, and our position is that it's going to be substantially upheld. They believe it's not. And so that argument is for another day.
I think what they said, though, is not that the statute won't be upheld, but that it would require the state to provide free identification, which would be an unfunded mandate. So don't we necessarily have to resolve the constitutional issue to decide whether this is an unfunded mandate or not?
No, you don't, because it doesn't require the legislature to then have to go in and file it. The statute, the initiative gets passed. If the initiative gets passed and a substantive challenge comes forward, the substantive challenge finds, A, which we believe it is a valid and constitutional statute and is enforceable, or B, it is unenforceable because it violates the Constitution. Those are the substantive results in regards to that. There's not a court that's going to say, legislature, go and now on the initiative, go and do and pay all this money. I don't believe that this court nor any district court would have any authority to tell the legislature what they can and cannot fund.
Mr. Romero, are you done? I'm sorry. Mr. Romero, currently, if you go into a polling place, so you're walking in,
right,
and they can't either find you or maybe your signature doesn't match, you can still vote, right? You do, and then they have to verify or whatever. But under this scenario, if you don't have an ID that they accept, you don't get a ballot.
Well, you still have a provisional ballot.
It's not what it says here.
But the law does not, the provisional ballot statutes are not amended in this case.
So even though this says, before being provided a ballot, you have to show me an ID.
There are two different ballots. You have a ballot that you get to vote for, and you have a provisional ballot. So that is a ballot. So, yes, I do not believe that would affect anything in regards to anybody's ability to do a provisional ballot. I mean,
could that be accepted if they didn't commit?
For example, if I'm down on the strip, right, and there's the big, huge trailer out on the strip that you can go vote for, and I'm from California, okay, and I walk in and I say I want to vote, I have no ID, I'm not even registered, guess what you do? You still get a provisional ballot. So that's not going to be affected.
You know, when it says acceptable forms of identification include, mm-hmm, so somebody could come with their Costco card and get a ballot. Or would they get a provisional ballot?
No, they would not get it if it's not under the approved requirements.
And every one of the approved listed IDs in Section 1B costs money, or you have to have a job or be at school, which also costs money, you know, right?
Yes, if you go to school, it costs money. It's just like it costs money if you have a utility bill. It costs money if you have a sewer bill. It costs money that if you own a residence. I mean, if you go back into it and you're going to look at anything that requires any type of identification, it's usually going to require some kind of payment. So if I could have 30 seconds, Your Honor, it looks like I have 30 seconds, but I would like to address
39 seconds.
Okay, I'd like to address the issue in regards to the preclusion. I know that the court is really into the merits of this case, but I want to address that. And there are many factors that happen if someone files a case that is relevant to many voters, and that's what happens in almost every election case. You have the Democrats, the Republicans, any independents, they all intervene because it's something that's important to them. It's a voting election. So to say that there's no privity in this case just makes it really hard to swallow, because...
Is there any evidence that there is privity in this case?
Well, yeah, they're both... Yes, the evidence of this case is there are both registered voters that are entitled to vote, and they have standing under the statute to bring the case. And so when you look at this...
So all Nevada voters are all the same. Somebody in Las Vegas filed a challenge, then somebody in Elko can't file their own challenge and make their own arguments.
Well, no, that's not true. They could. But if you look at the rules of the court, right, if someone was to file an election case in Carson City, which is where all election cases go, then, and it's a similar case, they have similar arguments, they intervene, or the cases are consolidated, there is an aspect of what happens. And so if one voter argues in a case that is subject to the court's approval, and that, for example, say for when this case is returned back to the court, when this case is affirmed and we go forward and it's put on the ballot, and if it doesn't pass, we will be back in 2 years, I think, and are we going to have to now have a new person file the same thing, go over the same description, go over the same arguments? No, because the court has already made the determination of all the arguments of that fact pattern, of the description being the same, the unfunded mandates being the same.
Let me just clarify, and then I'm going to have to make you sit down. And the prior litigation, it obviously went to the district court. It never came up to this court. Is that correct?
That's correct. It just stayed. There was no appeal. And so I don't believe that the court's arguments, the court's findings of how it becomes moot after if it's not held, it never came up here in the first place. So it stopped at the district court. And res judicata and issue preclusion still are effective if it doesn't come up to the Supreme Court and is not reviewed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Mr. Fox.
Thank you, Your Honor. It's just a handful of points, and then I'm happy to answer any questions. On the provisional ballot question, there's a federal law right to cast a provisional ballot in federal elections. So they would get a provisional ballot, presumably, assuming Nevada counties follow the federal law, but it wouldn't be counted. I mean, there's no provision under which it could be cured, or they could show ID later, or it could be counted. So the fact that they would get a provisional ballot under federal law doesn't do anything to help solve the problem. They could get a ballot, but there would be no chance it would ever be counted. I think one of the key things to keep in mind about this petition is that the problem with it under Article 19, Section 6 would be so very easily solved. There have been a number of petitions proposed that included a provision for creating free ID within the body of the petition. That would solve the problem. Alternatively, if they don't think it's necessary or they want to have that fight later, they could include a funding mechanism to the extent that free ID is held to be required. And there's an obvious funding mechanism sort of immediately adjacent in this area, which is you could just say that driver's license fees will be increased to the extent necessary to fund the provision of free identification. And doing that would solve the Article 19, Section 6 problem, and it would give voters the choice that voters deserve to have under the Nevada Constitution, which is to understand the consequences of the provision, to understand the revenue and the expenditures, and to make a decision about whether it's worth it. But what this provision tries to do, what this petition tries to do, unlike a lot of past ones on this subject matter, is it tries to hide that effect, even though it's constitutionally required. And that's exactly what Article 19, Section 6 prohibits. On the description of effect, in addition to the problem of the expenditure, there's also the problem that this description just doesn't address. It doesn't say what IDs are acceptable. It doesn't say that someone's going to have to pay for it, and whether it's the state or the person, someone's going to have to pay for it. It doesn't say that. It doesn't say how the mail ballots will be subjected to additional verification. And there is plenty of space in which all of that could be said. I acknowledge that the thing this description has going for it is that Judge Maddox wrote it, and that is true. And we're not saying it's biased, but what it doesn't do is sufficiently describe what this petition will do. It's a lot like the description of effect in the Sanctuary Cities case, which I acknowledge is unpublished, but which said that a description that just did what this does, it just provides a bare description at a very high level of what the change in law would be, that that's not enough. It needs to describe the effects. And a voter, a potential signatory looking at this description of effect, would have no way to know how it will affect them personally or their friends, how it would affect the ability of people to actually vote. You know, it sounds good in the abstract, okay, voter ID and additional verification of identity, but what does that actually mean? And it doesn't say.
Did you guys present anything below regarding any type of studies that were done to show what other states had to incur fiscally by their legislature with similar legislation being passed and having to give out free IDs?
So we did, Your Honor. We cited all of that. Information that's in our appellate brief was, I believe, all of it. I guess it's possible there was an oversight, but basically all of that was cited in our complaint. The fact is that there was no dispute below, and I don't think there's a dispute now, that if Nevada has to do this, it will cost money. There's just never been an argument made that Nevada could provide free ID without having to spend money.
But what do you say to their point that they're kind of all in and they're taking the risk if indeed there's a challenge to this passed and there were a challenge brought to it, the failure to provide free ID, if you prevail on your challenge, would invalidate the provision?
Well, the concern that we have is that I don't think that's true. I don't think it would necessarily invalidate the provision because the legislature has an obligation to follow both the federal constitution and the Nevada constitution. And there is a pathway for them to comply with both, which is to, yes, the petition will be in effect. It will require, if I may just briefly finish.
But, I mean, yes. Their point is substantively we're all in. If we're wrong and you're right, this law, this provision will be inoperative.
But
so
Your Honor,
that's a substantive challenge, is their point.
But that doesn't bind the legislature. The legislature will look at their obligations under the Nevada Constitution and the federal Constitution, and they will conclude what is very clear under federal law, which is that they are obligated to provide free ID as a matter of constitutional law. And we will have no opportunity to challenge that at that point.
Well, you'll have the opportunity to argue at the legislature they should not do it and therefore let it fail.
Correct, but there wouldn't be a constitutional argument to make. In other words, the argument would be that the Constitution requires this, and that's the argument that would be made, and there would be no opportunity to say, well, then that violated Article 19, Section 6 2 years ago. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. All right.